trans bandwagon to push their woke agenda onto their customers.
Your son is dead, killed by the woke mind virus. So I vowed to destroy the woke mind virus.
Woke mind virus, pushing civilization towards suicide.
A brief interruption from the woke agenda at 3CR.
Please be aware that the interview we will be bringing you for the next 30 minutes includes descriptions of discrimination based on race, sexuality, gender, and gender expression, which may be distressing for some listeners. If you are in need of assistance, please call Lifeline at 13 11 14, or if you are First Nations, 13 Yarn at 13 92 76, or if you are queer, Queer Life at 1800 184 527. Good afternoon, and you're listening to 3CR's Trans Day of Audibility broadcast. I am your host for the next 30 minutes, Amy Eatnitz-Ciara, and today I am bringing you an interview with non-binary sex worker Charlie Bear and their research into the Australian Christian Lobby's anti-trans and anti-sex work campaigning. Hi Charlie Bear, how are you doing today?
Hi, Amy. I'm well, thanks. Happy to be here. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Let's start by giving our audience a bit of an idea of who you are and what it is you do.
Sure, no problem. So my name is Charlie Bear. I'm non-binary. My pronouns are they, them. I'm an established hands-on sex worker, and I specialize in working with neurodivergent, disabled, and queer clients, in part as I belong to all those communities myself.
I saw on your social media a while ago that you've been doing some research for a video project that you're working on into the anti-sex work campaigning by groups like the Australian Christian Lobby and some conservative politicians. Would you mind telling the audience a little bit more about this project you're working on?
Sure. So I've been working on a huge research project, and it will eventually be turned into a video essay. I kind of tripped and fell into a much more complex situation than I had originally realized when I first was looking at this in 2023. So at that time, I was really following quite closely what was happening in South Australia with repeated pushes for decriminalization bills for sex work. Sex work is decriminalized, or almost all of sex work is decriminalized in Victoria, New South Wales, the Northern Territory, and Queensland. It is legalized, which is often conflated with decriminalization, but is not the same, in the Australian Capital Territory. And there are models of criminalization remaining in South Australia, Western Australia, and Tasmania. So I was really looking into South Australia when a Liberal MLC called Nicola Centofanti put through a Nordic model bill. And this was interesting to me because the Nordic model bill is essentially a criminalization model in everything but name. It targets sex workers' ability to basically have clients. It targets their ability to have housing, their ability to have access to their children, to access things in public spaces. For example, in countries where Nordic model bills have been enshrined in law, you have, for example, women who may never have done sex work. Often these are Asian women who are barred from accessing pubs or whatever because the owner claims then if they take this person to court, oh, well, I thought you could be a sex worker. So as we can see, it has a bunch of downstream effects on the ability of women to move freely, particularly racialized women to move freely in public and private spaces. But in everything but name, it is a criminalization bill for sex work. So I began to look into the kind of organizations and testimonies that Centofanti was using to try and lend legitimacy to this criminalization model, the Nordic model, and kind of was struck most of all by an organization called WEEP, that is Women Ending Exploitation by Prostitution, which had essentially sprung up out of nowhere and had no real links, credible links, to any history of organizing for or against sex work or women's liberation or anything like that.
Or any like academic research, any government research?
No, this was, it appeared to be completely astroturfed.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, long story short, I found some damning links between Weep and the Australian Christian Lobby via Weep's small list of people who they followed on social media, who were essentially the almost certainly the direct relatives of a woman named Amanda Broyer. The Broyers are interesting to me because Christopher worked with the Australian Christian Lobby for, you know, 7 years. He's recently moved on to become a Senate candidate for Family First. That's bad. But he worked as a state director for numerous states, including South Australia, and then as a national director of policy in the tail end of his career with the ACL. And even on his Senate candidacy, he notes that his wife Amanda was like a partner in his work with the Australian Christian Lobby. So the Australian Christian Lobby was really of interest to me because of the role that they played in helping to orchestrate the coordination of various groups to kind of come together and strongly stand that sex workers are bad. Ultimately, though, what the project is about is how various groups who would otherwise seem to have, you know, very contradictory opinions. You've got people who self-describe as radical feminists, though more accurately are SWERFs, sex worker exclusionary radical feminists, almost always the same people as TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists. And these people hold positions about sex work being this kind of key site of domination by men over women. And that sex work is inherently abusive, that it is apparently paid rape, slavery, all that stuff.
And not a job, not a service, none of those things.
No, it's this. There is this kind of very conspiratorial kind of bridging and kind of like work that needs to be done to support these ideas, working hand in hand with people like the Australian Christian Lobby, or the Australian Christian Lobby relying on the research done by discredited SWERFs.
Yeah.
So why this is interesting is because the Australian Christian Lobby is against women's bodily autonomy. They are against abortion. They are against women having equal rights. They have this biblical idea of complementarianism, that men and women are separate but equal, and of course the women must support the men.
Yeah.
And they have all these kind of positions which oppose women's freedom, yet these alleged feminists are working with them and also with conservative politicians, or you might even say opportunistic politicians,
yeah.
And with disgruntled former sex workers to kind of coalesce around this Nordic model bill.
Yeah. So what has the ACL's relationship been to the queer and trans community?
If you don't mind, before we get to that, I might just give a bit more information about the Australian Christian mm-hmm. Lobby.
No worries.
So the Australian Christian Lobby has been around since 95. It has been incredibly well kind of connected to politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Every Australian Prime Minister has met with the Australian Christian Lobby,
yeah.
Including turning up at rallies that they've organised and speaking at their events.
Yeah.
Speaking at their events.
Including, so Labour and
Yes,
Liberal.
Labour and Liberals.
Yeah.
So the Australian Christian Lobby is also incredibly well funded.
Yeah.
They have accepted government grants, almost $500,000 across 2019 to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But most of their money comes from anonymous donors.
Yeah.
They have made over $10 million. That was in revenue. That was in 2022.
Yeah.
But they've continued to grow, even though that was a high. Recently, they've made over Recently, they've made almost $8.5 million in 2023 and more than $6 million in 2024, which is up significantly from when the plebiscite was happening on same-sex marriage. Back in 2016, the plebiscite was held in 2017, where they made over $3 million and then $4 million. So this is several-fold increase on that. And those are numbers that I've taken from the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission filed by the Australian Christian Lobby. Yeah. So what I really want people to understand before we get into the relationship between the Australian Christian Lobby and the queer community more broadly is that the Australian Christian Lobby has been around for 30 years. Almost three decades.
Yeah.
That they are incredibly well connected to politicians and the media. They've had a number of people who've been either the directors or important people like Christopher Broyer move through the ACL onto Senate candidacies or being members of certain political parties. That they have great reach both to the Labour and Liberal parties at the state and federal level. And that they are incredibly well-funded and well-resourced. Yep. So they're not new to this.
Yep.
And their campaigning, while it does, target queer interests and specifically for today, trans interests and rights and healthcare and stuff like that, they are not exclusively going against that. And unlike other lobby groups, which pop up to organize around a single issue, and then once that issue has been resolved, kind of dissolve themselves, the Australian Christian Lobby is here to stay. In relation to trans folks specifically, the Australian Christian Lobby denies our existence. It is against trans healthcare for people of any age. Same goes for affirmation or access to public space. They campaign for not only trans but all LGBT folk for conversion therapy, also known as abuse. They are against any kind of family or parental rights with LGBT plus folk, and they are for discrimination against LGBT plus folk in schools and workplaces on the grounds that this is religious discrimination, which is rubbish. In 2022, the ACL was actually recognized as a hate group by the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, a US-based org founded by veterans of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which found the Australian Christian Lobby listed against organizations such as the National Socialist Network, the Proud Boys, One Nation, the Australia First Party, Binary Australia, and LGB Alliance, all of whom are virulently and feverishly anti-trans.
Currently, we are seeing a global shift to the right across the world right now, and there is a target on trans and gender diverse people's backs. I'm thinking in particular about, as well, the white Christian nationalist Project 2025 in the US, written by Russell Vo and the Heritage Foundation. So what is your observations of the Australian Christian Lobby? Are they learning from people like far-right Christians in the US or in the UK? What are your observations?
Yeah, so I would agree with you that there has been a rightward shift in the last decade of politics internationally. There is a lot of scapegoating of trans people, particularly the most marginalized and vulnerable trans people, including, of course, trans children. So in terms of what the Australian Christian Lobby has learned or taken from this, the lobby itself was actually modelled on the Christian Coalition of America, which still exists, and they similarly hold like a tax-exempt status, and they market themselves as a grassroots organisation, despite, well, not being that. They have a training organization for like public policy advocates, and in some ways we have like a less sophisticated political kind of lobbying environment here in so-called Australia, but the ACL has even branched out and has its own law center, which takes on it's called the Human Rights Law Alliance, because of course. And it takes on kind of cases which they think will help gain public attention and like move the needle on things, which is common in, like, a common practice in this kind of lobbying environment in the US. The ACL hosts reactive, conservative, and evangelical commentators from the US. Their current CEO has spoken at an international CPAC, which is the American Conservative Political Action Coalition. She did that in 2023 when she'd just been appointed. The ACL has and continues to support Trump in both administrations, and a lot of the kind of political talking points and like policies, very culture wars vibey. They use that word a lot. They
talk about the woke agenda a lot.
Yes, they talk about the woke agenda. They are in parallel with places like the US and the UK, but very specifically, the US is like a good kind of understanding the US is a good entry point to the Australian Christian lobby because they model themselves after that. And they amplify any kind of reactionary success that they see overseas. For example, the abysmal and discredited CAS report, which came out last year in the UK and has been kind of held up as like a new AI covered piece of paper with which to kind of try and beat trans people and to scapegoat them. But I'd argue that in line with other international far-right and conservative Christian groups, the Australian Christian lobby has made a shift in its rhetoric over the last decade, particularly. So if we think about kind of the conversation around marriage equality, you know, the ACL did lead that opposition campaign, but it had been a talking point, you know, in the US and the UK and here for much longer. And, you know, in 2012, you had then managing director, who's now the ACL's chairman, Jim Wallace, come out and make these comments about how being gay was like equivalent or worse than smoking. We must apologize to smokers because of the health outcomes that come not from being gay, but actually from the kind of discrimination and stigma that LGBT plus people face. In 2016, the then ACL president, Shelton Lyle, or is it Lyle Shelton? I forget. But on Q&A, he equated like same-sex parents having children to the stolen generation.
Wow.
But, you know, this kind of rhetoric was, you know, the spicy stuff that got picked up a lot in the media, but generally the conversation around like marriage equality was with a lot of deference to the Bible. Yes, you know, in some Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And I think that now that has moved a lot more to kind of natural law and these like naturalistic fallacies around trans folk. So
is this like gender essentialism?
Yeah, I mean, as we touched on, I think earlier, they have a kind of complementarianist understanding of gender. So like gender and sex are collapsed. And the idea is that like men who are male have certain skills, females have certain skills, and they complement one another in this separate but equal arrangement where women still are ultimately subservient to men, which is, I should say, like repudiated within Christian communities.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think that it is worth noting that these kind of, this deference to the Bible, these talking points are less popular now. And to gain kind of public support and appeal, there is this kind of language, this feigning concern.
I would like to add at this point as well that all the Abrahamic religions have queer histories, and there are moments in their histories where you can find examples of queer people. And one that I love to bring to people's attention is the person who started Quakers, Quakerism, which was the public universal friend who used no gendered pronouns and identified as having neither gender and had been referred to as they, them pronouns as well. And they were born in 1752 to 1819, and people might remember Quakers for Peace at Disrupt Land Forsters in 2024. So there's a sect of Christianity there that actually is got a very trans history. So what can we do to combat white Christian nationalism here in so-called Australia?
I think that one really important thing that you've just done is labelling it. You know, the researcher and journalist Chris Stevenson has been writing about the Australian Christian lobby as Dominionist or Christo-fascist for the last 15 years. The folk here on Yanar Pasaran have argued that the ACL is Dominionist. Christo-fascism or Christian nationalism, white Christian nationalism, is something which has gained kind of more mainstream awareness since the pro-Trump January 6th insurrection in 2021. So kind of having an understanding of how these things work and what labels to apply is very helpful. So I think one thing that's really important to recognize is that a lot of the kind of backlash to groups like the ACL actually comes from other members of the Christian community. And, you know, it is politically beneficial for groups like the ACL to create this illusion that there is this groundswell, that they are genuinely a grassroots movement, that they represent all Christians, that this is a unified position, but it's really not. And if we pay them, if we treat them as if this is a widely held belief within Christian communities, it's just false. I would recommend a book like The Seven Deadly Sins of White Christian Nationalism by Carter Hayward, who is a theologian and priest. She's also gay, and I found it, like, I am personally, I don't have any faith, but reading her writing about this and dissecting of it from a Christian perspective, she was able to bring in kind of all of these ideas and Christian traditions, which I was not aware of before reading it. You know, other works like The Power Worshippers by Catherine Stewart, who's a journalist, who's spent, like, you know, decades now kind of researching and writing also about Christian nationalism in the States, is also really helpful. I wish I could recommend more local kind of research of this nature, but as far as I know, there's not a lot that's super accessible and easy to read. I think that ultimately the most important thing to understand when, like, orienting yourself toward groups like this is that they are going against fundamental facts of, like, human reality. Social reality, biological reality, you know, trans people exist. Hi, we're here. So speaking specifically on trans issues, you know, these people are doing all of this work and they are stirring a panic and they are scapegoating, etc. But they are making an argument that is just fundamentally false. So we have the evidence that they are wrong. Walking around in your everyday life is just the evidence. We are trans people here. We live in these bodies. It's just part of our life. So I think that if we can recognize that the Australian Christian lobby is trying to, you know, have an outsized influence, and it does, on the media, agenda setting, and politicians, if we can recognize that they are making arguments which are coming from a place of being fundamentally flawed, they have nothing to stand on except the fear that they can whip up, and the support that they can get from their powerful friends. We don't need to give these people an inch. And we don't need to give people who make these arguments which are harmful and are leading to the deaths of trans people, and even if not that, although that obviously happens, the increasing marginalization, they are making people's lives harder. Not just trans people, but anyone who might be, you know, for example, in the US, only a few days ago, a bill with the guise of protecting girls from trans children in sports that are, like, less than 10 trans athletes in the US, and in middle and high school, this bill was put forward where all middle and high school girls should have their genitals inspected within their schools in order to be able to play softball. And this bill lost by 9 votes. Lost by 9 votes. Yeah. So it didn't pass. But, you know, do you really want your children's genitals inspected in school environments? Don't think so. This is something happening in the US, but as we've already covered, groups like the ACL take a lot of their They take a lot of inspiration from what's happening in the US. So it's not limited to affecting trans people.
There's also been cis women followed by police into women's bathrooms because the police thought they didn't look womanly enough and suspected them of being trans.
Yes, of course. I think that this is around gender policing and stabilizing these concepts like gender, which we can use to build the family unit, which we can use to build this organized society through this like Christian vision that the ACL like is basically lobbying for. With those things in mind, I think it's perfectly reasonable and in fact politically necessary to reject what the ACL is pushing for. It's killing trans children, it's killing trans adults, it's causing many folk to experience abuse, and it's reinforcing a political climate which villainizes and infantilizes trans folk. A lot of the time when you're talking to people who have these views, they've become convinced because of effective override. You know, when someone is talking to you and, you know, they kind of move beyond the arguments that make sense and they come into this very emotional place. They're worried about children. They're worried about abuse. They're worried about all of this stuff, which isn't really happening. It's very difficult to engage with someone who's having that experience, because they are in a space where they can't hear you. So it's not worth putting your effort into that. It's much better to redirect toward caring for people in your community, care for your loved ones, care for your children if you have them. Become involved with other people because you're not an island. And the best way to avoid being sucked into these narratives is to be in community with other people, not only in your personal life socially, but politically. Recognize that your freedoms and your responsibilities are bound up in relations with other people. Paraphrasing a queer author and activist, Sarah Shulman, this is the overstatement of harm to justify abuse. Two other recommendations I might make is Ian Danskin's project on YouTube, The Alt-Right Playbook. It's now concluded. It was a multi-year project from, I believe, Trump's first presidency, looking at the tactics and ways to combat them. A lot of these like videos are very easy to consume and make a lot of good points with reference to other places you can learn more info. I'd also recommend George Lakoff's Don't Think of an Elephant, which is a book that really deals with framing and can help to kind of come up with new narratives. Because I think a lot of the time with trans arguments and policy and so on, we end up starting on the back foot. We have to fight against these false premises, this misinformation, before we can even talk about our lives and who we are and what we need. So I hope that is helpful.
Thank you for that. And thank you for coming in today to talk to us about this really important issue that affects our community.
Sorry, it's such a downer.
It's okay. That is the state of our community in the world right now. How can people follow you?
So you can find me online. The best place to go would be my website, which is charliebearbookings.com. You can sign up to my newsletter there so that I can let you know when I've completed my project. You can also find me on Blue Sky and Instagram via the handle @charliebearbks. I think if you listen to Only One More Thing, it should be Migrant Sex Worker of Colored Diaries, which is a 3-part series hosted by my very admired colleague, Jasmine Ratki-Rani, which Jasmine put together last year for Race Matters over on FBI. You can find that by searching Migrant Sex Worker of Colored Diaries, FBI on Google.
Thank you for listening to today's interview, and thank you to Charlie Bear. If the content in this segment you just listened to has raised any questions or caused distress for you, please call Lifeline 13 11 14 or 13 Yarn 1392 76 or QLife at 1-800-184-527. Ciao.
LGBTIQA+ people, That's come from a large history of people standing up and acting up for our rights and our communities.
Talking queer Pacifica, talking about us.
You know, this very like violent act of like hatred and bigotry towards trans people, where they demonise the image of trans people, especially trans women.
For working class queers, for queers of colour, for those who are poor and homeless, the struggle is continuing.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.